You try and you fail, and you try again and fail again. Does not sound like a story with a happy ending exactly, but it is the narrative of Tavis Smiley's latest manifesto on how America need not be deterred by its setbacks and failures recently. Smiley writes that he's had plenty of his own in his very successful career. He's learned the power of staying engaged despite failure by watching the struggles of the civil rights movement, determined to succeed against all odds. Tavis Smiley also gets his inspiration, he says, from writer Samuel Beckett, who describes his work as a quiet series of failures, always failing better. Well, Tavis Smiley says determination and patience is what's required in thinking about the Supreme Court and the latest challenge to the Voting Rights Act, the landmark law that got passed back in the 1960s after many costly failures. Tavis Smiley is the host of The Tavis Smiley Show and author of Fail Up, 20 Lessons on Building Success from Failure.
I do love the Beckett quote because I think it is applicable to our personal lives, to our professional lives, and to our political lives, to your point more expressly. The Beckett quote is simply this: ever tried, ever failed, no matter, try again, fail again, fail better. I love that. Try again, fail better. And that, to your point, is the essence of what the civil rights movement is all about. I am at the moment, I haven't said this publicly as yet, so hope PBS won't be upset for me putting this out on your show, but I'm working on a primetime special, a two-hour in-depth piece that will air on PBS next year about the dance and the strategy that Lyndon Johnson and Dr. King both had to do, John, to get this law passed as we celebrate, of course, the 50th anniversary of the Voting Rights Act, and that this kind of work is not a sprint. It's not even a marathon. It's more like a relay. One generation passes the torch to another generation. We are not eternal. We are ephemeral. So we sort of come and go. But if you can pass that baton off to the next generation, the fight, the struggle continues. And so here we are celebrating 50 years of this historic piece of legislation.
Among the arguments, though, that the Supreme Court will hear this week regarding the Voting Rights Act will be something like this, that civil rights was about changing a set of rules, that there was a set of rules that we had that we thought would go on forever in America that involved segregation of the races and overt discrimination. And the civil rights movement and all the laws that came to be said, no, we're changing the rules here. The Voting Rights Act is a little bit different in the sense that it puts a watch on certain areas of the country that have a track record for certain kinds of behaviors. The argument before the court will be, yeah, but things changed.
Yeah, well, clearly I come down on the side of remaining vigilant and diligent about the watch and about what needs to be done. It's the difference between de facto racism and de jure racism. I just don't think we have arrived in a place as yet where we can strike those laws off the books. I mean, look at this last election, for example, and all of the conversation and all of the fear and all the trepidation. Go to Ohio specifically. You don't even have to go down south. Just go to Ohio and look at the issues that we were confronted with in this last election to realize that we are not yet at that point. I don't know, as long as racism is the most intractable issue in this country, and I still think it is, I don't know that we will ever get to that point necessarily in my lifetime.
What if we just made voting as simple as switching on a light? What if we made voting so simple that you couldn't game the system? Okay, racism is still going to exist in the United States, but it wouldn't involve your ability to vote.
I essentially see it this way. This is a solution chasing a problem. This is not a law that ought to be stricken as yet because the problem still exists. And the solution, those argue, on one side is to just get rid of this. We no longer need it. But the reality is that the problem still exists. We've not yet arrived to the point yet where we can move past it. I mean, I think that what you're suggesting is a beautiful idea. I just don't think that that's the kind of euphoria that we've arrived at as yet.
Although, you know, to make voting just easy so that people can't play around with the rules, it doesn't mean that the Voting Rights Act goes away. It just it speaks to this universal question of what the Voting Rights Act was all about, and that is to remind Americans that this right to vote is totally precious. We should create a system where nobody can mess with it. If it's that precious, nobody should be allowed to play games. Shouldn't be a county clerk, shouldn't be an election poll worker, and it certainly shouldn't be the political strategists and the people in the legislature.
I totally agree, but there is a particular group of people who tend historically and even now to pay the greatest price for the system being gamed. And we have to ask ourselves, why is it that this particular group of people, and oftentimes in this particular region of the country, and we're not naive here, but why are these people the ones who end up being victimized when the system is gamed? And so, again, I agree with you that we ought to have a tamper-proof sort of system. But as Dr. King said so often, you know, you can't legislate morality. And so we can legislate the right to vote, the exercise of the right to vote, but you can't legislate what's in people's heart. You can't legislate what's in their mind. You can't legislate their actions. And when those actions end up denying or depriving a particular group of people historically, I don't think that we so easily just strike that law, strike that protection, as it were, off the books.
All right. Then before we go, I can't resist on this. You chose as a title of your latest book, Fail Up, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know where that term comes from. I mean, in the network world, in the broadcast world, in the corporate world, you know,
right. I don't know where it comes from, but right now it could be a great slogan for NBC.
Exactly. The people who fail up. Exactly right. I mean,
given that they're in the basement right now.
It's
yeah.
a pejorative. It's like the person that fails by succeeding or succeeds by failing. I don't know.
But that's why I like that Beckett quote, you know, try again, fail better. It works for all of us, including networks, so NBC hopes. But at the end of the day, here's the bottom line. If people are being honest, if you were honest with the listeners, you would admit that you have learned much more from your failures than you ever learned from your successes. Any person who's honest about their success will admit that. You learn more from the bad stuff than you do from the good stuff, and you can't get to the good stuff without going through the bad stuff. So we have to start to see failure as a friend and not as a foe. And so what this book really does is to celebrate my 20 years now in the broadcast business, not by talking about the 20 greatest moments of my career, but trying to get folk to understand that I've only been whatever people think of my success, whatever that might or might not be, I've only arrived at this place by learning from the mistakes I've made. And God knows I've made a lot more than 20. But these are the mistakes I've made, some of the worst, some of the biggest, and these are the lessons I've learned from them that I hope to pass on to other people to apply to their own lives.
Well, let me just say, if I was really honest with my listeners, as you suggest, I'd be off the air, Tavis. That would be the end of my career.
Okay, you keep that between you and God.
Yeah, I will. I will. But no, I celebrate failure just along with you. If you're on the air, you know what that's all about. Tavis Smiley, thanks so much.
Thank you, John. Take care.
On Notes from America, we have conversations with people across the country about how we can truly become the nation that we claim to be. Each week, we talk about race, our politics, education, relationships, usually all of them, because everything's connected. And you, our listeners, are at the center of those conversations. I'm Kai Wright. Join me on Notes from America, wherever you get your podcasts.